Welcome back to Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik Palmgren. Good to have you with us today. Now, before we start the show, I'd just like to let you know that we have some really cool stuff planned at the end of this month. So I've mentioned a few times now that our radio show is coming up on its 10-year anniversary. Now, the website was up and running about 3-4 years before we started the radio show, but we're in 10 years deep now, a decade of Red Ice Radio. It's amazing what you can cover in that amount of time and how you can change as you learn more and more. So to celebrate this, at the end of the month, Saturday, April 30th, we are doing a live TV show here from the studio, a marathon broadcast, and this will actually be on Valpurgis Night, going into May 1st, May Day. It's a good time to do it as we're going into a new season. For the first marathon show, we are also going to do it as a fundraiser. We do this because, you know, we've managed to patch together all the gear that we need here in the studio. We've invested quite a bit already, so we'll be able to do an okay production. We have some cool features, but we do really need to improve the quality of the cameras, for example. And I think we can do a better job, and I think we can do a better job with your help. But first, we wanted to actually show you and also talk about some of the things we'll be able to do with your help. We also need to branch out eventually and have studios in other parts of Europe, America, and down under as well. So I have tons of ideas to share with you of what we can do, and we're really going to need your help. We want to have you involved. There are some fantastic things that you can do these days in terms of connecting and patching in video here to our studio, and I want to share these ideas with you, and also want to hear from you. We're going to have guests dropping in, joining us throughout the evening, and we'll take your calls as well, either video or just, you know, phone, just audio. So as I present some of these ideas, we want to hear what you have in mind so that we can kind of, well, brainstorm a bit, really, and figure out how we can cover in the best way everything that is happening right now. We need to have our own correspondents and reporters out there. And at this stage, we simply don't have the money to fly our reporters and correspondents to different parts of the world. So why not utilize people that are already there? We want to find good people, talented people, driven, who are as concerned as we are about what is happening, so that we can get the word out and have our own media, TV media, covering all the madness on a regular basis live in order to bypass the bullshit in the mainstream media and get our version out from our perspective. So I have so many ideas to share with you about this. We have some, you know, fun stuff planned, and this first marathon fundraiser will be kind of laid back, you know, more fun, not too hyper-structured and organized. We'll go more with the flow. So Lana and I will be hosting it, of course. And we'll have other people joining in through video, some high-profile guests throughout the evening as well. We are going to create a page on the websites, redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com, where you'll be able to read more as all the final details fall into place. And we'll keep you, of course, updated here on the radio show as well. We've not decided the exact time yet, and we don't know exactly how long it's going to be, but it will go for several hours. It will be a marathon broadcast. We have a lot to lay out to you and present to you and explain what we'll be able to do with this new edition in the future. We'll do a Radio 314 hour. We'll probably do some kind of flashback segment or something as well, talking about all the interests and topics that we moved through throughout this last decade. We definitely want to address that as well. Now, this first marathon is obviously just the beginning, just a start. What we plan to do is a weekly wrap-up live TV show every Saturday. This is going to be an addition to the Red Ice family of shows. It's not going to interrupt or interfere with the radio shows. That is going to remain just as is, but we want to expand, you know, and add on another show, live TV. It is going to cover anything really that has been going on that week or other research work concerns that we have gathered up that we've not been able to cover on the radio show or on the website. And we'll share more information and details about this ahead and what the plans are, but now you know how it's all going to start. So mark your calendars. April 30th, Valpurgis Night, Red Ice 10-year anniversary live TV show, a marathon and a fundraiser. It'll be a lot of fun. You definitely don't want to miss it. It's going to be the beginning of something really good and important. I know it. It's really the next edition that we need to do to expand and go forward. And we've been wanting to do something like this for a while as well. So this is a good time and a good opportunity to do it. All right, so let's switch gears now and shift over our focus to our program here today. We recorded this about a week and a half ago. We wanted to cover Obama's Cuba visit because it was such a symbolic act. We've invited Frank Jorge, or Frank George, who is Cuban. He's living in America now. He fled from Cuba many, many years ago. He has his own show now in America, and we wanted to get him on to talk about Cuba and what he thought about Obama's visit there and what strange indication of merging political ideologies that Obama outlined when he visited Raul Castro in Cuba. So that's our main topic, but we have a lot of other things to discuss as well in terms of politics in America and where things are developing now with the rise of democratic socialism and how worried Frank is that America is becoming more and more like the Cuba he fled from. Stay tuned. Hi, Frank. Thank you so much for coming on the show with us. It's great to have you here. Hope you're doing well today.
I am doing well, and thank you so much for this opportunity, Henrik. I am delighted.
Thank you so much. And you know, I wanted to bring you on because Obama just did his visit to Cuba. We're a couple of days late here, I guess, but he was actually, in my opinion, touching base with some of his ideological origins, kind of tipping his hat to Cuba overall, and of course Raul Castro, and even got photographed in front of a Che Guevara mural and everything else. And I wanted to bring you on, Frank, because obviously you come from Cuba originally. You were, I think, came to U.S. as a young man, and I think it would be really good to kind of talk a bit about what this was about, both symbolically, but also in terms of how these systems and how the systems overall are beginning to merge together. And he expressed this idea that the systems weren't really that different. But I think it would be really good, actually, for people to get a little bit of a background of the kinds of conditions that you fled from, that you were getting out of Cuba from. So tell us a bit, if you can, what the conditions were like in Cuba when you got out, or by the time you kind of started looking into where you actually came from. Give us a bit about your background, if you will.
Sure. We came to the United States in 1957. That was a full 2 years before Fidel Castro took over. But at the time, the decision was made to leave that country because the regime in power, which was tyrannical, Batista was the dictator's name. Apparently, my father found out that he had been put on some government hit list. The conditions there, with which you're asking about, were such that a civil war had commenced. Fidel Castro was up in the hills, in the forests, hiding out from the Batista forces, trying to bring about an overthrow of that regime. And of course, the population is caught in the middle. You could have coffee with someone in the morning, and by midnight you would hear gunfire and you will find their body in a ditch somewhere. That was happening quite often. So the system in terms of buying items still worked rather well. You know, you could buy bread, you could get butter, you can get food. There was not a problem with such things. The issue was one of freedom and representation. And Cuba, having been a country that had a very well-educated population and a currency that was quite strong even compared to the American dollar, having a dictator was not something that was acceptable to the people. Well, my father did get a visa. We were never refugees. And in 1957, we found ourselves on the shore of America, Miami, Florida, to be precise. And just 2 short years after having arrived, I remember as a little boy listening to radio there in Miami, and we could receive Cuban radio stations. It was, I think, sometime in the wee hours of the morning that one of our Cuban neighbors knocked on the door, waking us up, much to the angst of my father, who didn't want to be woken up, and told us that there had been a successful revolution to turn the radio on, and we could hear, and indeed, turning the radio on, we could hear how the local radio stations there in Cuba had been commandeered and were being used to direct troops from either side, depending upon which radio station you were listening to. And by morning time, it became quite evident that Fidel Castro had achieved victory. Everyone was overjoyed, but in a number of years, we would come to find out that he was a communist and, in essence, had betrayed everybody, just everybody who had fought alongside him, including the father of Ted Cruz, who is now currently running for president of the United States. Ted Cruz's father was one of the men who had sided with Fidel Castro, only to find out that he was a communist much later and himself suffering imprisonment and torture at the hands of Fidel Castro. Rather an interesting point when you have somebody who's now running for president of the United States and would wield all kinds of military power, and his father had been tortured by this guy that Barack Obama has just gone over to see, and he's the first president we have had visit Cuba in 90 years. Conditions as they currently exist in Cuba, far less freedoms than there were under the tyrant Batista. Getting items like butter is very difficult. Sometimes you have to have American currency to do that. The communist system that was put in play as a system of economics was so poor that even the Castro brothers admitted that it wasn't so hot, and they began to implement some changes. I do have a cousin that I am able to email every now and then. She's a doctor, and she receives the equivalent of about, I think, $24 a month, American dollars. That's for a full month's work. A lot of the people do receive a free education, but I cannot say that it's really free, because then, for example, a lot of my family members there on that island are doctors, and they're pushed out to go to places like Venezuela, which is not faring well under communism either. And they will work there as doctors. Whatever money they receive goes back to Castro. Sometimes 92% of what a person earns goes back to the Castro regime. You can't really buy anything. Now that it's loosened up some, it's getting a little bit better. But it's a hellhole. That's why a lot of the Cubans do everything and anything they can, and they risk their lives to flee to the United States, which is 90 miles away.
Yeah, you know, we have the same, obviously, not on that extreme level, but, you know, Sweden, they tout free education, universal health care, and all that stuff. And it's never free, right? It's never. And the services they offer is, of course, below standard, so to speak, which is horrible. But one thing I've been interested in seeing is the kind of the popular, the flirtation with the Castros, with, of course, Che Guevara, and this incredibly how popular that has been in the West, and how that somehow on some level this is a system that has been seen as a rebel, right? That this is an anti-establishment system and everything else. But even going back a few years back of some of the research I did then, just remembering the fact that Fidel, I think, was actually a member of the Order of the Grand Cross of Malta, or a Knights Templar branch, basically, where these guys were lining up with all the other elitists and shaking their hands, and it seems very much to be just kind of it's for the masses, a stage theatrics, if you will. I'm not sure. What's your take on that, Frank?
Well, I don't know whether he was ever a member of any of those organizations. As a young man, he was a radical always on the university campuses, and he did acquire a degree in law, and actually I'm not sure whether he really finished that or not. What does become obvious about him is that he has never been a stable personality. The man is nuts, and the way you can tell is because when he would show up at the United Nations to deliver a speech, the other persons who were there said, "Fidel's coming to speak, let's get out of here." And that's because Fidel can deliver a speech that may last about 6 hours. It's more like a rant, and he does the same thing in Cuba. And he's simply a thug, an imbalanced, a psychologically imbalanced individual who has seized the reins of power in that country, bludgeoned everybody into submission, and they are living his dream, which is their nightmare. I'm talking about that population in Cuba. And, of course, one of the things that I think propelled Castro headlong into communism wasn't just the fact that Che Guevara had approached him about communism and sort of sold it to him, and Che Guevara was a true believer in that if you could get people to do this brotherly thing called communism, everything would work out. But the reality is that communism, like any form of tyranny, runs against the grain of humanity. We're just simply not designed to do that. You're not getting paid for what you're doing. You're not going to work. There's nothing in it for you. You're there giving everything and receiving next to nothing, which makes of a human being a very, very miserable person. So people here in the United States and in other parts of the world romanticized this Cuban Revolution, along with Che Guevara, which was a huge flop, an absolute flop. And somehow people construed that all that misery was a good thing, a wonderful thing, and would be wonderful for the people of the United States. You know, Henrik, one of the things that I remember from my youth, having a Cuban girlfriend who had come from the island just a couple of years before I met her, was she said to me that in her whole life, and she was like 19 years old, in Cuba she had never seen ham. Never, ever seen ham, which was a very common item when I was there, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that she had been invited to be a hostess for all these persons who were coming from the United States and other persons. You know, these are people who are loving communism and the Cuban Revolution. And she said there was an abundance of food and other items that she never saw in her life. They were simply not available to them, but they were used as propaganda for these persons who were visiting the so-called paradise. And I've been told by communists here in the United States, why did you leave paradise? And they have not got a clue about what they're talking about. They are frequently believing what they want to believe and not dealing with reality at all. So this madman who has taken over Cuba and his brother have bludgeoned the people into submission. They have no way of doing anything. There are mini uprisings, M-I-N-I, small uprisings in terms of people taking to the streets and just yelling out their frustrations. And then they're rounded up and they're taken off to prison and some of them are tortured.
Yeah, I just looking through, trying to remind myself here of what order he was part of. And it's the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, if anybody wants to look that up. A lot of photos of Fidel meeting with some of the highest people within the Jesuit order and the Catholic Church and everything else, which kind of, you know, of course it doesn't mean that, oh, they're all in on it just because they have a photo together, but it alludes to this fact that it's also a very kind of a theatrical kind of opposition. However, I'm not saying that the conditions that people grew up under in Cuba and lived under, especially under Fidel, wasn't by any means real, so that shouldn't be misunderstood. But why now? That's the question, right? Do you think it's because Fidel is out of the picture? His younger brother Raul has kind of taken over the reins. Has that changed things as far as you can tell dramatically, that has allowed for Obama to travel to Cuba and do this speech?
I think the necessity for Cuba to bring in capital, to have a system that more closely approximates an American model of capitalism, is what prompts that. They're broke. They're dead broke. That is one thing that communism always yields, is it's great about creating poverty for everybody. And in that way, it's an equalizer. It's an economic equalizer in the kind of misery that it brings. There are shortages of everything. We're seeing that in Venezuela now. You know, they were at one time prosperous. They had everything. But now under the communism that they're practicing with their President Maduro and before that Hugo Chavez, there are shortages of everything. And, of course, Raul Castro himself had said, and even Fidel, that the Cuban model was not one to be followed in terms of economics, that it did not work. They actually admitted that. So now along comes Barack Obama, who is at heart a communist, because one must remember that his career was launched in Bill Ayers' living room. There is that close tie between Bill Ayers, the communist, the agitator, the former weatherman, the guy that did bombings in the United States to give expression to his anger. Mr. Obama has always had ties with the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam and black radicals have always had a streak of communism and a great love for the Cuban Revolution, not understanding what Cuba was. They thought that there in Cuba, as black men and women, they would be received and that there was no racial prejudice. And what a lie, what a hoax. The reality is that Cuba, just like the United States and any other place, whites would want to separate themselves from blacks, and blacks of different shades of darkness would separate themselves from each other. They had different social groups that they would become members of, and if you were too black or too light, you could not go into one or the other. So they practiced discrimination amongst themselves, the blacks did. But, well, that was lost on all the Black Panthers and the Nation of Islam types that would go to Cuba to receive training on how to overthrow the United States. This was military training. This was propaganda that they were given to come back to the United States, stage an uprising, and overthrow the established order. Mr. Obama harkens back in his beliefs to that time and has ties with all of those people. I believe within himself, he holds a deep hatred for the United States. He holds a hatred for white people in general and lives in a fantasy land of his own. I don't think Obama's head is very tight, as some would say it. There are plenty of screws loose there, and he's demonstrated that over and over by lying. If there's anything that Obama is consistent in, it's in lying. The guy is just a liar, probably a pathological liar. I have had a conversation with someone who knew Mr. Obama when he was very, very young in Hawaii. And Barack Obama identified as Barry Satoru, a foreign student. That's what he told everybody. And the young lady who knew him, who was on Pastor Manning's show, the black person, her name is Mia Marie Pope, and she said that if Barack Obama came in and told you that the sun was shining, you better stick your head out, make sure that was true, because he lied all the time. And she even said to him, Barry, why do you lie so much? Why do you lie so much, Barry? He was also known for selling sexual favors to well-off white men so that he could buy drug money. In essence, he was a male prostitute. These are the things that have been revealed about Barack Obama. There are many tales about his homosexuality or alleged homosexuality. And somehow all of his information has been locked away so no one can gain access to it. So now Barack Obama going to Cuba is not a surprise to me. I think this is something that was probably planned through back channels that people don't have access to, a communication between himself and his group of radicals, Valerie Jarrett, all of them, Jay Johnson probably, you know,
mm-hmm.
Loretta Lynch, all of them who I consider to be communist sympathizers, America haters, white haters, wanting to overthrow the order here. And they're given a degree of freedom by the folks who truly control American government. It's not the American people. I happen to think that America is controlled by special interests, a group of people that govern this with an iron fist and who are behind the scenes. So anyways, Obama decides he's going to go to Cuba. I think this was something that on the surface is rather theatrical. The reality for it, we're not privy to, but I think these are the tales that have been worked out by fellow communists, both the Castro brothers and Barack Obama, who has a deep love for communism, even though it doesn't work. So there you go. It's a marriage made in heaven, so to speak.
Right. Let me just play this here. I think this is from his audiobook, where he reveals quite a bit.
To avoid being mistaken for such a sellout, I chose my friends carefully. The more politically active black students, the foreign students, the Chicanos, the Marxist professors and structural feminists and punk rock performance poets.
Yeah, so there we go. It's from his audiobook. But I think this is really, you know, kind of symbolic, Frank, as America clearly has moved much further to the left over the years. And you know, Cuba, which is understandable, obviously want to get probably into a system more like, you know, the global mercantile system. Maybe, who knows, maybe they even will be pushing a central bank on them, etc. Which, I mean, I can understand the desire to get a bit more material comforts and get away from, you know, rice and beans. However, I think it shows how uniform everything is getting. And it's really something that kind of he expressed in his speech as well. Let me actually play a couple of these clips here. While we're on that topic, this has to do with the background of how, you know, America and Cuba shares its same oppression. Let me just play some of these.
Because in many ways, the United States and Cuba are like two brothers who've been estranged for many years, even as we share the same blood. We both live in a new world colonized by Europeans. Cuba, like the United States, was built in part by slaves brought here from Africa. Like the United States, the Cuban people can trace their heritage to both slaves and slave owners. We've welcomed both immigrants who came a great distance to start new lives in the Americas. Over the years, our cultures have blended together.
Now, is that true? I mean, is it a similar scenario? Who built Cuba?
Well, actually, Cuba was built by its European settlers. That's who did it. And of course, you know, we're talking about white Spaniards. And the slave trade, of course, was something that was functioning. This was something that happened everywhere. And they had their share of black slaves also, because the white settlers, the European settlers, had actually killed off the Indian population by overworking them. A rather sad thing to have happened, but one must bear in mind that the kind of people that were being sent over to the New World were like the one percenters, the very objectionables that did not represent European population. And of course, when we talk about places like Cuba, and we talk about the colonization of South America and such, there's a lot of folks who always want to point out the cruelty, which was, it was real, but one must realize that the people that came over and did all those things were not representative of the mindset of the greater European population.
Right.
But Cuba was actually built by white Europeans. It is something that is dismissed. And some people say, look, what Cuba is, it's actually a white European nation in the Caribbean. That is what it is. That's what some people describe it as. Now, because Mr. Castro decided that he wanted to bring in, and we're talking now past the time when slaves were brought to Cuba, he began his campaigns out in Africa, Angola and such. He brought in tremendous numbers of blacks into that nation, sort of like what's going on now in the United States, you know?
Yeah,
we're bringing
right.
in Africa into the United States.
Yeah.
And the population became very diluted. It was mostly white before Castro. Right now, I don't know how it runs. When I see a clip from Cuba, I see a lot of black people, and some folks think the Cubans are black, and that's not the case. Whites, we were at one time a majority there. What's happened now, it's anybody's guess.
So this is a fairly recent transformation then. I don't know if you can give us any numbers, but in terms of demographics, when the slave trade was going, I mean, we know that there was a lot to Haiti and Dominican Republic, Cuba,
right.
this region, obviously, but was there more whites than blacks at some point when the nation had been established, if you will?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There were more whites, and the white population was far greater than the black population. And of course, the problems that come when you have blacks mixed in with whites were very prevalent there too. At one time, there was an uprising of blacks. This was way before Castro, of course. And much further into the origins of the country itself, there was a black uprising, and blacks were hung by the thousands because of the violence that they were committing in order to free themselves, if one wants to call it that. So the island does have that history, much as there's a parallel here in the United States between the blacks not being happy even after they were emancipated, and even after having forced the entire population of the United States into integration. And this is something that has bothered me for a long time, Henrik, that here in the United States we did have what was known as separate but equal. The white population did not want to mix with the black population. That was just something that was as it was. It was a personal decision. And then the government, without consulting with the people, without putting it up to a popular vote in a so-called free country, decided that they would do away with all segregation. And in that sense, the government did seize further control of people's businesses in terms of telling businesses that they could not discriminate. They could not keep a black person from going into a bowling alley, a movie theater, or any such thing. And of course, this forced integration where you had to grant a black person an apartment, for example, you could not discriminate there either. It was a complete social upheaval without the consent of the people, and it has had horrible results. I think the same thing has happened in Cuba. Whites there desire to be able to segregate, to be among their own, to make their own decisions, and that does not visit an evil upon any black person. It's just whatever they're capable of doing, fine for them, let them do it. But the whites want to be by themselves. They don't want to be forced to mix with blacks. That's, I would say, both in the United States, although it's not spoken of, and in Cuba, it's the same. It's the same.
Well, I mean, frankly, we have more to lose. When you have miscegenation, most people who you know are born under such a marriage or conceived under those conditions, if it's a black and a white person, the child usually ends up both looking and also identifying as black. So, you know, just for the sake of actual diversity and preserving the differences, this is actually an important step. And I mean, look at how the elites have been pushing this for years now, that somehow it's a greater virtue to mix yourself out and blend yourself out. Every commercial we're getting is mixed race couples, and this is like the latest thing for what they're trying to promote to young women. I think it's heinous that they're pushing this in such a way. I mean, we know there are people that find each other, they fall in love. There is travel, there is transportation. Now this happens. It's nothing you can, you know, force a law, I think, and you know, enforce in that regard. I think that's just not going to happen. But when there's this active promotion of it, like somehow it's a virtue beyond, you know, just getting with someone of your own, that I find absolutely despicable. Don't know about you, Frank.
I feel exactly as you do, and in fact very, very strongly about it. One of the issues at stake here is the issue of freedom, that every man, every woman should be free to the greatest degree that is possible when we unite together under a government that we approve of. Always under such circumstances where we come together, we give up some freedoms, much as we do when we get married. But this situation here, where you lose control over your businesses, where you are not allowed to say who can come into your business and put out a sign that says, okay, I don't want any blacks coming into my store. Okay, that's a personal decision. That is business that it's being turned away. Or the freedom of association that, you know, a bunch of you set up a school, whether it be a black school or a white school, and it's just for your people. This is, I think, a personal decision that should be respected. But the kind of propaganda that's being put out on TV screens and the movies everywhere is unbelievable, Henrik. It's off the charts. I look at this crap, and I tell my wife, okay, there it is. There's the black man with a white woman. He's kissing her. He's having sex with her. Okay, you know, we know we're going to be subjected to this. And you say to yourself, where the hell does this come from? Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Who has the need to brainwash everybody and to socially engineer everything into a direction that is completely abnormal? And like yourself, I look at it. I know that there is a percentage of the population that would race mix. But the norm, I believe, is not to do that, and I think that that's a natural instinct. It's not a bad thing. If nature put together the white race, the black race, you know, the yellow race, I believe that there's a mechanism there where it wants to preserve those races. By it, I mean nature, that there's a natural impulse. And then maybe there's a little quirk there that if some of the races begin to die out, then you have, you know, this crossbreeding, miscegenation, whatever or other. But what is being forced upon us, and the emphasis is forced, is something that is somebody's idea of what should be happening, and it's odious, it's repulsive to see how they try to program everybody. I hear that in the United States, in the South, a lot of white girls will go out with black guys because they've been programmed and they feel some kind of guilt about black people. Nobody should have any guilt about black people. They're as free as anybody else within the United States. They are a population of about 44 million. That is four times the population of Cuba, which is 11 million people. Mm-hmm. And what? Black people can't get it together in the United States, and they're always pulling on whitey, and Yet, you know, they're upset, they're angry, Whitey owes them something, and it's no different in Cuba. It never was,
right,
even when I was a little boy.
Yep. Let me play a couple more clips here from Obama's speech. Sure, if I didn't clarify this, folks, but this is a speech, obviously, that Obama did in Cuba when he was there, what is it now, four or five days ago. But let me play a couple more here.
Now, there's no secret that our governments disagree on many of these issues. I've had frank conversations with President Castro. For many years, he has pointed out the flaws in the American system. Economic inequality, the death penalty, racial discrimination. We do have challenges with racial bias in our communities, in our criminal justice system, in our society, the legacy of slavery and segregation.
Now, it's funny to me, Frank, because the situation is, of course, very different today, but just the fact that he's bringing attention to something in the past and I don't know that much how things were in Cuba earlier on and the conditions, but there's an interesting contrast to this, which is never highlighted. There's actually a book that came out, I think it's a few years ago. It was called Where Black Rules White, The Journey Through and About Haiti. And it's about Haskett Pritchard, a popular Edwardian era English traveler, travel writer, that actually sailed to Haiti in 1899 to survey the conditions on the island. It was the first ever black ruled republic. At the time, it was believed no white man had ventured into that mysterious and closed off part of the world since 1803, after General Jean-Jacques Dessalles ordered the massacre of all whites in what was then Saint-Dominique. So this book, I'm reading from the cover here, and says that Pritchard had opportunity to venture deep into Haiti's interior, unknown at the time, and was first to witness the practice of voodoo. He also narrowly escaped with his life after an attempt was made to poison him. Pritchard's observations, narrated in an exquisitely understated tone, cover every aspect of Haitian society in 1899, ranging from the grotesque and the tragicomical. Indeed, the reader will experience just about every emotion in the human spectrum as he devours this immensely entertaining book. More importantly, Pritchard's account explains why Haiti, once one of the most prosperous colonies in the New World, is so profoundly dysfunctional today. It goes on from there, but this is something I never knew about. It was very, very interesting that you actually had in this region a complete reverse, situation where blacks ended up actually, executing the white population. And this is something that we never, ever hear about. Did you know about this?
I believe I do. Now, Haiti is right adjacent to the Dominican Republic. I'm trying to pull it from my memory. Am I correct?
Yes,
there?
Yes, that's right. It's like it's almost like split in half, I believe, the island
It's split in half. The Dominican Republic is ruled by whites. They do quite well. Haiti is a hellhole, and what happened there is they overthrew their French overseers, took over, and created a nightmare. Every time there's a problem down there, the United States goes and donates all kinds of food and everything. And I have not seen anywhere in the world where you have a black country that is successful. Now, you look at South Africa, and I know that you have, and that was where Nelson Mandela wound up ruling. The whites who controlled that nation gave over power to Nelson Mandela, a communist, someone who Fidel Castro actually loved and helped in some way.
Yep.
And they took that successful country and destroyed it. I mean, absolutely destroyed it. This is something that's not even spoken of in the West. What we hear about here in the United States is what a wonderful guy Nelson Mandela was. And in fact, he and his wife Minnie were terrible people and brought ruin to what was a prosperous nation. I have never, ever heard of a black-ruled nation that has done very well. Even parts of the United States that are black ruled do not fare very well. There is something wrong in terms of the beliefs that are held by some of these people. And where people talk about the United States and racism, as Barack Obama is talking about, because you see some of these radical blacks, they can't get away from that. They don't want anybody to discriminate against them. They have to force their way into some white person's life. And now someone listening to this would say that I'm a racist, and factually I'm not. I would say that I am a realist. I am looking at things for what they are, not for what I want them to be. If you want something to work, you have to deal with reality. Now the fact is that a lot of people don't want to deal with black folks, and that's fine. It's called freedom. And freedom is the most wonderful thing you can have in order to evolve. The problem with what we've seen with black people is that many of them, I don't think, can exist under the kind of European governance structures that you find in the United States and in Europe itself. They don't do well. They don't meet the bar. They do better in a hellhole like many parts of Africa and Haiti. It seems to be their way. And if you bring them into an environment such as we have in the United States and many parts of Europe, they don't function well. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. We don't have in the United States so much a problem with people hating blacks because of their race or anything. I don't think that there's a great deal of hatred. It is an objection to a dismal culture of failure that they adhere to. And they want to pull everybody down because they are not able to achieve standards for performance that whites deem to be just natural and normal, nothing spectacular. So yeah, the government went out of its way and hung these people around our necks, and I'm not speaking badly of them, and the United States itself has been brought down tremendously from what it could have accomplished, and it has accomplished much. But now we're at the point of diminishing returns. We're being disassembled. You got your first black president, an absolute flying piece of crap, a mental midget who believes himself to be great only because he is self-important and completely detached from reality. He has proven this over and over again. The elites that run the United States of America, Henrik, allow their pet monkey to run around all over the world delivering speeches that are vacuous. They have no substance to them. This speech that you played for us right now, where he talks about racial discrimination, get real, dude. If somebody doesn't like you, they don't like you. Don't make race an issue because, you know, you're of a particular race and somebody owes you something. And that's what it comes down to. He thinks somebody owes him something for being black. Everybody owes some black man something. And it is stupidity. It is utter stupidity to utter such stuff. And there will be a stark awakening in the United States and the world if freedom, some semblance of it, is ever restored to the people of the United States, and the government says, all right, you know, we recognize that it was wrong to impose segregation upon you. You may do as you wish. You will not be taken to court for refusing to lodge somebody in your motel who happens to be black, or for refusing them entry to your movie theater or your bowling alley or whatever it is, or even having them in your movies. You know what? There's a lot of people that would begin doing that immediately. Let me give you a case here, Henrik.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not to stray off topic too much, but you've heard of the flash mobs, particularly in the South, where a bunch of blacks will go into a store and strip it clean and run out?
Yep, yep.
All right, so I'm a business owner, and I'm a nice guy, and I love everybody, no one, no matter what color. They do that to me a couple of times, and I want to put out a sign in front of my store that says, no blacks allowed. The only problem is I would be taken to court for effectively doing something to save my business. So what should I do? Close it down, leave town. That's it. So then you have the typical black ghetto with not enough businesses, no money because there's no revenue coming in from businesses. Why? Because of the utter destructiveness of a culture that is a culture of misery and failure that most black people love. And then they go out there and say, hey, whitey don't like us and we're angry with the United States of America. It's ridiculous. There's no way of pleasing such a mindset.
You know, I think today there's is a continuous focus on how whites, you know, treated blacks and discrimination, segregation, all these things. Obama repeated again and again in his speeches, and not just this one, but others too, obviously. But what I see happening today is that there's a tremendous pressure on whites who are discriminated against in every way. And I would say in a way that actually never was inflicted upon blacks by whites, right? Even, I mean, the rhetoric is incredibly intense these days. Obviously, there's more than just rhetoric. We do have a out-of-control black-on-white violence and black-on-black violence, too, for that matter. But that's completely omitted entirely from the discussion that somehow, you know, they don't even recognize that, you know, if they even talk about it, it's quote, reverse, you know, racism. That's what they say, right? But there are scenarios now where whites are not allowed to create a student union. They are not even allowed into certain areas, you know, at these universities. They create safe spaces, you know, from whites and things like that. What I'm saying is that what's happening today is at the very least a repeat of what they accuse us of, that we did as whites to them, right? And they're, you know, and at the same time, of course, they are actually, they're given a leg up today in employment, scholarships, admission to Ivy League schools. There's a number of things, affirmative action, etc., which is racially based discrimination. So the whole dialogue here is completely out of whack, in my opinion, and it's just incredibly disingenuous. What do you think, Frank?
I think your opinion is the correct one, and the term white genocide does come into play, and I'm a latecomer to the use of that term, but I do use it because you see it. You see it. It is palpable. Everything that you mentioned and even more. Look, when they brought those 1964, 1965 Civil Rights Acts, which effectively declared the end of the freedom of a people to associate with whom they wanted to, and forced integration, they opened the door to a variety of ills for the white race. Not only is it the blacks, but now you've got the Muslims. You know, the Muslims are in on it. They're making anti-discrimination suits in order to gain positions of authority. In one case, it happened to be with someone, a Muslim, who wanted to be a supervisor in the FBI, and by using these ridiculous anti-discrimination laws and such, was able to attain employment, attain a position in that manner. I've seen the same thing happen here in the United States in civil service, where a person was given a position on the basis of their color, particularly if they are black. And whites have been pushed into a corner, told to shut up, not to complain, and to simply provide. It appears that the role of whites these days is to be providers for the rest of the third world who are not white, and it's not going over very well. I think at some time there will be a problem. There has got to be a problem manifest before we get to the point of South Africa where whites are literally being extinguished because they are the ones who are not able to get jobs. And I know you're familiar with this. I think you've spoken to Karen Smith of South Africa, who is a tremendous lady. And that is never spoken of here in the United States, but we're seeing that same scenario unfold here. And I don't think that our our government will ever roll back those laws which have amounted to white genocide in the United States of America. They will never do that willingly. Something violent is going to happen in this country. Something is going to spark it off because it's too much. It's too much what is being demanded of a people because of their color. And I am speaking of white people. Everybody else is making the demands. You got the Mexicans, you got the Muslims, you got the black people. And it's very interesting that a function of culture seems to be what decides this. You look at the Asians, and they don't seem to bother anybody. They come over from overseas. They come to the United States. They work their asses off. They become millionaires or become wealthy. And it's got to do with the work ethic. It's got to do with a culture that imparts upon them a way of existing, a way of thinking, a way of addressing problems. And then you have all these other groups, and they don't amount to anything. You look at the Middle East, particularly because of Islam, is a disaster zone. And these people at one time before that thing that they call religion, and I don't think it's a religion at all, it's something dressed up to look like a religion, has destroyed them, destroyed a successful culture. And you look at the United States and all the politically correct crap, all this stuff about doing for the black race, that is the equivalent to me of the disaster that took place in the Middle East. You have a philosophy come in, and it's an anti-common sense, anti-life philosophy, and it destroys everything. And we're seeing that happen here. These are the so-called Civil Rights Acts that were supposed to do something good, and they're not. They're a nightmare. It's opened up the portals to hell, and hell is coming and settling in the United States. We don't even have borders anymore.
No, we don't have that.
What we do have is we have a so-called black president. Nobody knows where he came from. He seems to be an invention, this guy. All his papers are sealed. He doesn't really make any sense if you really scrutinize what he's saying and doing. He's more of a theatrical performer than anything else, and he continues a decades-long whine fest on behalf of black people and against white people. White people owe him and all other blacks something, and that is a total farce. I'm sure you know that the first slaves in the United States were not blacks. They actually happened to be white.
That
is a historical fact.
Yeah.
Never discussed in these gatherings where blacks need a safe space to be away from everybody. This is called segregation, by the way, and which we're not allowed to do, but they are. reality has no bearing on their view of the world. And I'm talking about this larger group that is heard so much. You have the Black Lives Matters, who, by the way, I think are Cuba sympathizers, communist sympathizers. If it's destructive to the United States, they will embrace it. They are the people that live on the second floor and will gladly burn the floor that they're on, disregarding that they're going to crash through the floor and fall to their deaths. It's sad, but that is what has been empowered in the United States. And I would dare say in Europe now, because of the embracing of the third world Muslim culture that is destroying that place, I saw where Hungary's minister actually stood up, prime minister stood up, and delivered a very common sense speech about how he's not about to let that happen in Hungary. The rest of Europe can burn and go to hell.
It was very good speech.
He's not going to follow that. Meanwhile, you got Merkel. Merkel's bringing all those people in. Merkel was a former communist, probably still functions as a communist, I think. She's destroying Germany and helping to burn down the rest of Europe. Everywhere that communism comes in, it appeals to people who are not doing very well financially. And at the very heart of it is a philosophy of thievery. That's all it is. Steal it from everybody else and give it to everybody else. Now you have power. When you have nothing left to give anybody, we're all going to be poor, and we will all be equally poor, and that's the only equality that they can bring to anybody. It's never worked anywhere. And people like Barack Obama, who the Democrats brought into power and apparently was allowed to become president of the United States by the elites that control this country, there is a purpose for him, and I think part of that purpose is to crash all the borders all around the world. We see what's being done in the Middle East, and bring about truly a new world order that the elites would like, and this is against the interests of people all around the world who love their own cultures, love their own countries, and it's this massive power. The massive power play that we see internationally all around the globe. The most shocking of all to me, Henrik, is out there in Europe. I cannot believe what I see happening there.
I know. I'm incredibly worried, but beyond worried. Words lack the proper expression of those feelings, really. I feel in front of it and what is happening there. I definitely actually want to ask you a little bit more about that in the second segment, but let me, because it's such an important aspect to it, but I wanted to make this point and also play an additional clip here from the speech. The flirtation with Cuba, as I said, has obviously now reached the halls of power, right? They still pose as counterculture. Still to this day, it seems that, you know, that this faction of the left wing is like somehow radical. It's against, the system and everything else. While on the same time, from the SJWs to the cultural Marxists to the lefties, they are the system now, and they still don't really seem to understand that. But let's listen to what he said again about the system in America, or actually what level the next president might be at politically. Let's listen to this here.
There are still some tough fights. It isn't always pretty, the process of democracy. It's often frustrating. You can see that in the election going on back home. But just stop and consider this fact about the American campaign that's taking place right now. You had two Cuban Americans in the Republican Party running against the legacy of a black man who was president while arguing that they're the best person to beat the Democratic nominee who will either be a woman or a Democratic socialist. Who would have believed that back in 1959? That's a measure of our progress as a democracy.
Yeah, exactly. Progress of democracy, right? So it shows that the Overton window has moved so much to the left that it's like, yeah, it's a, you know, he's obviously talking about Sanders as the democratic socialist, right? But it shows not only how globalization has worked and how America has moved so much to the left, while maybe to a certain extent Cuba has moved more into that environment as well, from their point of view to the right then. But it speaks to how homogenized everything is getting, right? And the fact that there isn't any differences, that now 50 years later, as I said, we're basically at the cusp of this enormous progress, which is basically to bring a system which is like, you know, it's not explicitly communist in its approach, but it's just basically one step, you know, from it. So I just find it incredible that it's gone this far and it's gone so fast, you know, to have someone like Sanders running and some of these other bozos too, for that matter.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. It's homogenized. Everything is being made into one. It's like taking all kinds of colors of paint and throwing them into one bucket and mixing them to come up with a new color that is pleasing to the creator and who the creators are of this chaos. It's just people that have a lot of money and they have enough money to be able to do this, and they have been operating as a unit for a long, long time, and that's the most that I can make of it. But still, I am astounded by what I see happening. Both America or Americans or the United States and the Europeans are being dragged into something against their will. And like the clip that you played, this is Barack Obama's particular point of view. Yes, we have Bernie Sanders, I wouldn't say that Bernie Sanders is a democratic socialist. I'd say he's an outright communist. Bernie Sanders went to both Russia and Cuba. He honeymooned in one of those. I can't remember which one. But he's a raving lunatic. He never even had a job of any real kind until he was about 40 years of age. And that job was that of becoming mayor of some city, someplace. And then you got Hillary Clinton. She's an outright communist. She's actually been investigated and has found to be a communist. She used to hang out with the Black Panthers and even protested against police and threw feces at police. This is who Hillary Clinton is all the while pretending to be something that she is not before the American people. She is a traitor, you know, to this nation and to its people and to freedom itself. It's like these people are mentally ill or something, and one cannot emphasize that enough. Anybody who goes for a system that brings the terrible results that we saw in the old Soviet Union, and that we're seeing in Cuba, where people flee, they get into anything that will cross the ocean and attempt to get over here. And now, of course, we have Venezuela, which was once prosperous. After all, they had all kinds of oil. And if there's something that communism does, it destroys wealth. Now Venezuelans can't even get toilet paper, honestly. and so we're all being blended into something, a new system of economics, a new system of governance. And it's being done, obviously, against the will of the intelligent people in the United States and those of Europe. It's a no-choice thing, where it's a violent thing. And it does involve bringing people from all around the world and dumping them in the United States, dumping them into Europe. There are no borders. Nobody can say anything against it that will amount to a hill of beans. The obvious destruction of what is happening is irrelevant in the point of view of the people that are bringing this about. And it appears that the only thing that will stop this from happening, this implosion, this planned implosion and resurrection into something that will exclude America having a middle class, will be a violent uprising. A violent uprising against the thuggery that has been imposed upon us. A violent uprising against the taking away of normal freedoms that anybody has, and a violent uprising against an established order that refuses to let the people have freedom as it clutches in a grip of iron. And I am talking about these elites that have run the United States of America into the ground because they are profiting from it.
Yeah, indeed. None of this bode well for the future, especially for the Western world. Ethnic conflict, religious strife, no society has survived multiculturalism for very long, you know. And that's where we're heading. And this is something I definitely want to talk more about in the second segment.
Sure.
Europe and everything that's going on there. We're not finished with Obama either, for that matter. But let's talk a bit about your show, Frank. I mean, you do your own show. Please remind the audience of how many times you do it and give us the website, the URL, and where people can catch you.
You betcha. Thank you for that. I host a broadcast, I like to call it, but it's actually a podcast. And my domain is frankandfriendsinternetradioshow.com. That's frankandfriendsinternetradioshow.com. I broadcast on Thursdays, and it's my activism that's on display there as I speak out against the issues that afflict particularly America. But we do talk about what's happening in Europe and other places. And again, that's on Thursdays. You can grab it 24/7 just by going to frankandfriendsinternetradioshow.com. I must mention that I have been an activist all of my life, really. And a lot of it is very, very interesting. Some of the last things I did was in California. I was an activist against illegal immigration. And here in the state of Wyoming, to which I have gone through a process of self-segregation for the safety of my family and myself, continue that by doing the broadcast.
All right. Very, very good. Frank and Friends Internet Radio Show.com. That's the URL. We'll have the link up and definitely check it out. Some good stuff. Lana was on there too. When was that again? Was it a couple of months ago? A little bit more, right?
A little bit more than a few months ago. She was wonderful. We had a discussion about white rights and such stuff, and it was great having her on.
All right, very good. So definitely check out that, folks, if you want to hear more. But yeah, we'll be back with Frank here after a short break. We have much more to discuss, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hard enough for night. If you listen to your heart the whole night
second hour coming up with Frank Jorge as we continue to discuss Obama, Cuba, Trump, Bernie Sanders, Hillary, and everything else in between. Join us at redicemembers.com, our members' website. 10 years of material there for you to dig deep into, over 1,000 shows. It's only €6 per month. You can sign up for a 3-month subscription and try it out. Or sign up again if you've been with us previously. Your account is accessible. Just click on My Account on the website and you can renew right there. redicemembers.com. We'll be back with more after the break. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you on the other side.